Welcome. I'm glad to see you're here again at the diner where the only dish we serve is the CLT sandwich. I hope you've returned with an empty stomach, eagerness, and a little bit of caution. Come inside and sample the dish where the flavor palette changes each week. From cryptids, to legendary people, tall tales, and myths from around the world. Stay a while, ignore the other patrons, and enjoy the dish that is the CLT sandwich.
Welcome back to the CLT Diner, where the only dish we serve is the CLT sandwich. My name is Anthony. I have the honor of serving this wonderful dish to you. Enjoying today's dish with you is actually no one. Yeah. So, unfortunately, no one was available to record today, but I'm like, you know what? I can do it. I can record by myself. Might be a shorter episode, but we'll see how it goes. This is probably going to be happening more in the future. As you know, my wife is pregnant, and she will be having a child come December, so I will not be able to be available with other people's schedules all the time, so I might have to start recording by myself more often than not, but I don't, which, you know, isn't as fun, I'll be honest, but I can't just leave you guys forever. I can't just go on a hiatus I can't not record an episode every time people's schedules don't line up. That's not the point. I want to be here on regular, here on business, here on, you know, as much as I can. So expect a shorter episode because there's not going to be anyone who interrupts me. Not going to be, you know, not gonna be anyone who interrupts me, not anyone who's gonna make little jokes. The best I can do is myself, you know? So, what we're gonna actually go over today, as you can see from today's episode title, we're gonna go over The Phantom of the Opera. We're gonna go over the book, the musical, maybe even the Joel Schumacher film. Well, it depends if I can get to that. You know, we'll see how long I want to talk by myself. But, yeah. So, The Phantom of the Opera is actually a really important film in my life. The movie, which got me into not only the book, but also musicals in general. And I fucking love musicals. Fun fact about Anthony. But, what's going on is, back when I used to live in Las Vegas with my sister, there was a time where we didn't have TV. So, we decided we were going to watch movies. We're going to have a whole night where we're just going to watch, a whole day where we're just going to watch movies. And Megan, my older sister, she had control of the movies. And she did not want to, basically, you know, siblings, how we are, we fight. She didn't want me to she didn't want to share the TV. But I wasn't going to be in my room and do nothing because I wanted to watch movies. So, we watched The Phantom of the Opera 11, 12, or 13 times in a row, which burned that movie into my brain. And I ended up truly, you know, liking it. I mean, when you're berated with something over and 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 over again, you kind of get used to it. So, I actually really do like The Phantom of the Opera. The movie brought me, when I got older into high school, I read the book. I listened to the music album from the musical, which there are differences between everything. Everything is different. So, we might as well just start from the beginning. So, The Phantom of the Opera, or Le Fantôme de l'Opéra, is a novel by French author Gaston Leroux. It was first published as a serial in Le Galois from September 23rd, 1909 to January 8th, 1910. It was released in volume 4 in late March 1910 by Pierre Lafitte. The novel is partially inspired by historical events in the Paris Opera during the 19th century by basically, It's, you know, an old movie. So, it's an old book. It's inspired. So, let's get into the plot. So, the plot I have here is from litcharts.com. We have the Phantom of the Opera summary. I decided to go here because the Wikipedia article does have a good plot summary, but it is small. Like, one, two, actually, I don't, you know what? It might be just as big. Actually, give me one sec. No, it's different. Okay. So, I'll probably be reading back and forth between the Wikipedia and the actual lit charts. So, let's begin. So, how many times can I say fucking so? In the 1880s, the Dubois and Polignies, last night as opera directors, chaos erupts when the ballerinas claim to have seen an opera ghost. Moments later, chief stage machinist Joseph Bouquet is found dead, hanging from beneath the stage. Although his death is attributed to suicide under natural circumstances, when people arrive to retrieve his corpse, they find no sign of rope. The narrator concludes that, you know, can't really be natural, and there can't be any other explanation, there must be another explanation besides suicide. Yeah, that's immediate big difference between the musical and the book, is that Joseph Bouquet, yes, he does die, but it comes later into the thing, and he's killed mid-performance, as opposed to right in the very beginning. So you can see where Android Lloyd Webber got some interesting. So, on that same evening, Christine Daae, a little-known soprano, replaces her colleague Carlotta, who is ill. Christine sings so beautifully that the public remains astonished, wondering why her talent has been hidden for so long. In the audience, Vicomte Raoul de Chagny, Christine's childhood friend, who is deeply in love with her, goes to talk with her backstage. However, Christine pretends not to recognize him, and later, Raoul, hears her talk to a man in the dressing room. The man declares a love for Christine, and in turn tells him that she has given him her soul. Overcome by jealousy, Raoul waits for Christine to leave so he can confront this rival, but when he opens up the room, when the door room opens, Raoul is shocked to discover that Christine's room is actually empty. You see, as this is, we'll get into the character of the actual Phantom when we get into him, because it is not so kosher. It's a love story and all that, but it is not a good... The Phantom is not someone that you should really, you know, want to be like. Don't be the Phantom of the Opera. Don't be Eric, his name is actually. Raoul writes Christine many letters, and Christine finally replies, saying that she does not remember him at all, after all. She tells Raoul that she will be at the Perros Guerriers, the village in Normandy where they first met as a children. Raoul hurries to meet her there, and during the journey, Raoul recalls their childhood. Christine's father was a musical prodigy in Sweden, considered to be the best violin player in all of Scandinavia. After a man named Professor Valerius discovered his talents, he brought Daae and Christine to Paris, where Christine soon developed her own musical talent as a singer. During trips to Normandy, Christine became acquainted with Raoul. Together, they listened to local Breton legends and to Christine's father's stories. One story in particular remained impressed on Christine's mind. The story of the Angel of Music, the person who can turn musicians into prodigies. I apologize for the dead air again. This is new for me. I'm not used to going solo. At Perros, Raoul declares his love to Christine, but she laughs at him. He then attacks her for talking to a man in the dressing room. Distressed, Christine leaves. Later, however, she tries to explain her situation to Raoul. She tells him that she's been visited by the Angel of Music, who her father sent to her after his death. When Raoul realizes that Christine is not talking metaphorically, but about someone who gives her music lessons in her dressing room, he bursts out laughing. Furious at the thought that Raoul no longer believes her to be a respectable woman, that is, one does not welcome men into her dressing room alone, Christine leaves. Basically because she's like, hey, the Angel of Music came to visit me. And he is like, no, you're fucking crazy. And then she's like, well, he thinks I'm crazy. He clearly thinks that I just invite random men into my dressing room. I'm going to leave now. Meanwhile, at the opera, new directors Richard and Monochrome are frustrated to receive the Phantom's letters, which they believe to be a prank. They fire Madame Giry, the box attendant, who claims to have personal interactions with the ghost, which the directors believe proof of her insanity. However, in the Phantom's letter, he makes various requests, you know, to leave his box 5 empty, to let Christine sing, since Corlotta, again, will be ill, and to make sure that his box attendant, Madame Giry, returns. The Phantom threatens to curse the theater if his desires are not respected. The, you know, directors are like, wow, we got this letter? Oh, this guy, he wants a lot from us. How about no? So they just ignore his letter. And then Carlotta, who has received the Nam's letter, basically encouraging her not to perform, she decides to sing anyway. As a result, the Phantom punishes her by causing her voice to croak in the middle of the performance, a shocking occurrence that the audience understands as some kind of conspiracy, since Carlotta's voice is too perfect to break on its own. The Phantom then causes the chandelier to fall from the ceiling. One person dies to be crushed from it, Richard's concierge, the woman whom he planned to replace Madame Giry with. And now this is also a big difference between the two. The Joel Schumacher film versus the book and the musical, except for certain places. The chandelier fall. That's typically the end of Act 1 in The Phantom of the Opera. Because it happens there. You know, the Phantom show basically be like, hey, look, I am real. This is what happens when you fuck with me. And he drops the chandelier, which is what they do in the musical. It's on a track, so it goes towards the stage, which is pretty cool. Joel Schumacher, he changed that in the actual movie to be the finale, basically to happen at the very end of the film, which honestly, I agree with. I think that would be it's a better way to end the story of the Phantom. I believe in Las Vegas, I'm not sure 100% though nowadays, they did change that in the actual musical. They changed the chandelier coming down at the end of the part in Act 2 as opposed to in Act 1. This gives it so it's more of a, you know, punch to the end. And they even changed the lyrics because in the song, and by the way, I don't have notes for this. This is all just coming from my head, except for the plot of the book. In the movie, the guy who, I don't remember his name, he toasts to our friends that are here. However, in the, you know, original musical, he toasts to the new chandelier. Clever on Joel Schumacher. I'll definitely have to give him that. I'm wondering the whole thing about, because I might be remembering this book a little different. After this evening, Christine disappears, and Raoul searches for her everywhere when he interrogates Madame Valerius, Professor Valerius' wife, who's taken Christine since she was a child after her father died. She says that Christine is spending time with her guardian spirit, the Angel of Music, who gives her music lessons and has forbidden her to marry. Fucking awesome. Cool. Like that. Great guy. Raoul concludes that the old woman is crazy, and it might also have influenced Christine with her deluded belief in fairy tales. However, Raoul's emotions oscillate between fury and pity for Christine. He wonders if Christine is the victim of someone's manipulation, or she herself is a manipulator, intending on deceiving on him to hide the romantic affair. Raoul then receives a letter from Christine, encouraging him to meet her at the masked ball that evening. There, Christine invokes her love for him and declares that she wants to share her story with him. However, even Raoul knows that he might be overreacting by distrusting her. He too is overcome with jealousy and insecurity to contain himself. He lashes out Christine, accusing her for being deceitful. Upset, Christine leaves. Which is, again, a big difference from the musical, where this is the scene where, you know, they profess their love for each other, you know, on the rooftops, like, mwah, yay, here we go to love each other, and in the book, he's like, nah, you fucking crazy, girl. So, Raoul then, decides he's gonna hide in her dressing room, where he hears her pity a man called Eric, and sees her disappear suddenly through the mirror, as if an act of magic. Utterly confused, Raoul nevertheless succeeds with meeting Christine at the opera again. There, Raoul tells Christine he plans on to leave on the expedition to the North Pole soon. He discovers that they do, in fact, share reciprocal love, and the two of them thus decide to become secret fiancés for the short time they have left together. One night, Christine takes Raoul to the roof, where she tells Raoul her entire... You know, there's an ambulance driving by. That's weird. Her entire story, and she explains that when she first heard a beautiful she heard a beautiful voice talk and sing to her. She believed it to be the angel of music her father promised to send to her. However, on the night that the chandelier fell, Christine magically found herself transported to the other side of the dressing room mirror, where she found herself in a dark, damp tunnel. A masked figure took her to his lair on the other side of the underground lake. She realized that this man was the same person as the voice, and must also be the opera ghost. Christine was deeply disappointed. The man was not an angelic figure, but a mere human. And it is the interesting thing about the character of the Phantom, is his, you know, deformity, but also his description, as throughout, there's a large difference between the musical and the book of his description. In the musical is very much, it could be a birth defect, it could be anything. Like, he could just, it's a birth defect. It's an extreme birth defect. Oh, my tummy's a bit grumbly. you know, he only has, in the musical, he has half a face that's deformed. Is very interesting. Because, you know, that gives him their very iconic half-mask. You know, when it's revealed, you know, he has an exposed skull. He has, like, hives on him. His eye is a different color. He has wispy hair. That's a lot different from the actual, the original novel. As Eric is he's corpse-like. Doesn't have a, like, part of his face is gross. His whole body is a corpse. He's basically a walking dead body. He has what they call his death's head throughout the story, where, you know, he has no nose. His eyes are sunken so deep that it doesn't look like he has eyes. He looks like he has two eye sockets, except that his yellow eyes glow in the fucking dark. His skin, the quote with Joseph Bouquet in the musical, like, yellow parchment is his skin. And it is, you know, stretched tightly around his bones, so he's very thin, he's yellowy, you know, he smells of death. Literally, the smells of death. And he smells like, and he feels like. So, that's the big description. He's not a handsome, Lon Chaney. Ugh. Pardon me. Ugh. Lon Chaney did a great job performing as the Phantom. We'll talk about that after we get about that, but I just want to bring up that that is what the Phantom of the Opera looks like in the book. He's a skeleton-like, thin man. He actually looks a lot worse than, you know, the 1925 film. Because that's all they could do at the time. So, Eric declared her love for her. Although she concluded he must be mad, he must be mad. He must be crazy. She couldn't help but be moved by his music. On one occasion, Eric was singing. She forgot her promise to never touch the mask and removed it, where she discovered his monstrous skull-like face, whose ugliness terrified her. Furious and sad at Christine's reaction, Eric planned to keep Christine with him forever. However, he ultimately decided to let her leave after a couple weeks, though he gave her a ring as a symbol of her faithfulness to him and made her promise to visit him regularly. That's, great role model. You really want to root for the Phantom, the guy who kidnaps a 45-year-old man-ish, who kidnaps a child, because I think Christine's supposed to be 16, and forces her to be like, yeah, you visit me regularly, because we're going to get married one day. It's creep. After hearing the story, Raoul concludes that they have to leave together immediately. But Christine says that that would cause Eric too much grief. She agrees to escape with Raoul the following night, although she admits she might lose her resolve and that we'll need Raoul to force her to follow. During this conversation, though, Eric has been listening the entire time. Raoul thus prepares his carriage to leave with Christine the following night. Aware of Raoul's plan to marry Christine, Raoul's older brother, Count Philippe, a respectable nobleman, tells Raoul that he disapproves of his relationship, because she's just a singer, not a, you know, member of nobility. This causes the two brothers to fight, which a circumstance that later convinces criminal investigators to conclude mistakenly that Philippe's death and Raoul's disappearance might have been connected to the brothers' disagreement. Ooh. That night, Christine is suddenly abducted in the middle of her performance. Desperate to find her, Raoul joins forces with a mysterious character known as the Persian, who knows Eric intimately. The Persian leads Raoul to Eric's secret retreat, although they fall into a torture chamber, a room whose walls are covered in mirrors, capable of creating strange illusions. They found a Punjab cord, the rope that the Persian concludes it must have been used to murder Joseph Bouquet. Let me Google Punjab really quick, because I'm pretty sure it's just a cord. Yeah, that's what, Punjab cord. Because Punjab is a state bordering Pakistan. It's essentially, it's a very, it looks like one of those, you know, those bracelets that you see those hikers wear that's like a bunch of rope together. That might be it, but in the musical and the movie, it's more of a, where it escapes me at the moment, it's a noose. It's more of a noose. And the Persian concludes that this was the murder weapon for Joseph Bouquet. He assumes that Bouquet discovered Eric's lair, thus causing his wrath, which led to Eric to kill him. The Persian also recounts important aspects of Eric's life. He explains that after leaving his family, who rejected him because of his horrible appearance, Eric worked as an illusionist and an assassin for the Shah in Persia, S-H-A-H, so Shaha, I don't know for sure, where he became an expert on torture techniques. The Persian also notes that Eric was one of the workers who built the Paris Opera House, the Palace Garnier. In this way, he was able to build a complex system of walls and traps that would allow him to come as go as will without being seen, like a ghost. Ooh. God, this episode is going to be so short. Fuck. In the torture chamber, Raoul and the Persian hear Eric. I think my toe is. Sorry. I scratched up my toe over the weekend, and I think it was bleeding a little bit. I reopened the wound. I apologize for my distraction. Raoul and the Persian hear Eric give Christine the choice to either marry him or die. Although Christine initially plans to die, as so to remain faithful to her love Raoul, she later discovers that Eric plans to blow up the entire opera house if she rejects him. As a result, she agrees to become his wife. She asks Eric to release Raoul and the Persian from the torture chamber, which he does. Despite being horrified by Eric's appearance, Christine remains committed to her promise to be Eric's wife. When Eric removes his mask and kisses her on the forehead, she begins to cry, saying that no other woman has let him touch her like this. Christine begins to cry as well, convinced this must be a sign of Christine's love. Eric is deeply moved and realizes that he no longer wants to keep Christine captive against her will. He decides to free her, allowing her to escape peacefully with Raoul. He makes her promise to put the ring he gave her on his finger when he dies. Dying of love, Eric visits the Persian, to whom he recounts these events, and the Persian, in turn, later tells the narrator about them. Eric says that Count Philippe died while trying to rescue his brother by crossing the underground lake. However, Eric says he played no part in Philippe's death, and the Count was dead before he found him. Eric then dies, and the Persian places the announcement in the newspaper about it. When the narrator discovers a body under the opera wearing his ring, he realizes that Christine obeyed the Phantom's dying wish, so that body consistuates is proof that the Phantom actually existed. Ooh. Now there is a giant. I don't know if it's this one because it didn't talk about it. But I believe that Don Juan Triumphant is mentioned in here as the Phantom's dying work. Like, it's the last work is his big thing that he works on. It is never heard, it is never seen in the book. It's just, his life's work. And it is never played, so that's also a fun fact. Damn, 26 and a half minutes. And I'm already through the entire book. See, that's what happens when I am stuck alone. So, we got some themes. Music, obviously, because Leroux uses operatic setting and the Phantom of the Opera to music as a device of foreshadowing. As Leroux was once a theater critic and his brother was a musician, so he was knowledgeable about music and how to use it as a framing device. Mystery, of course, gothic, horror, romance. Now, the Phantom, or Eric, is not a good guy. He's a terrible person. He's a creep. He's a predator, technically. He's a murderer, which is a big thing. Murder is bad. I don't know if you know that. It's so terrible when I have no one else to bounce off with. I don't know how YouTubers do this where they talk to themselves for, like, hours and hours upon end. Ugh. Blew. Yeesh. So the character of Eric himself, it is, very few very few details are given about Eric's past. The novel confirms that Eric has traveled to multiple countries, including France, Russia, Persia, where he met the Persian, and northern Vietnam, learning various arts and sciences from each region. Eric himself laments that the fact that his mother was horrified by his birth deformity and that his father, a master mason, never saw him. Most of the character's history is revealed by the mysterious figure known as the Persian, or the Daroga, who saves Eric's life in Persia and followed Eric to Paris. The many different versions of Eric's life are told throughout adaptations, but these are just as they are. And, let's see. Blah, 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 blah. We're just going to talk about a little bit about his deformity again. Lon Chaney's characterization of Eric in the silent film Phantom of the Opera in 1925 remains close to the book, in that Eric's face resembles a skull with an elongated nose, slit and protruding, crooked teeth. In this version, Eric is said to have been deformed since birth. The best part about that is the Lon Chaney Phantom, it was him. Lon Chaney, which we have an episode about him in the future, was known as the Man of a Thousand Faces. And he was an expert at prosthetics and all that, performing himself into these creatures, great character actor, where he pinched his own nose upward to give it a, you know, he caused himself pain to give himself the looks of these creatures, and especially with the Phantom, where he used fish scales to hold his nose upright, you know, so it could be look like it was flattened and skull-like. It's an amazing way it was done. Just give me a second. Different. I can't spell. I can't spell again. Phantom of the Opera. Alright, make sure that my computer is on mute. So we're gonna, this is from anordinarypen.wordpress.com. Phantom of the Opera, book versus musical versus movie. So, let's take a look at what happened here. Now, one of the good, thank you, Raoul the Vicomte de Chagny, also the Vicomte the Comte de Chagny, is very different in, you know, appearances. First off, he's believed to have a mustache in the original book. This isn't. I'll be honest. This website isn't that helpful. Not to what I need currently, but everyone should go with that. We have owlcation.com. I don't want an ad, please. Thank you. All right. Again, you know, I will get better at doing these solo episodes as I will have no choice. And I apologize for how terrible I am right now. I just bleh. So I thank you guys for listening. All right. We have a novels versus the musical. We're going to do these differences from allocation.com. In the musical, Christine, the big one difference is the Angel of Music. In the musical, Christine tells of her father's promise that he would send her an angel of music. She also remembers as a child hearing the phantom voice singing behind the wall. In the novel, the phantom did not grow with Christine as a child. The Phantom noticed her as a young woman and approached her behind the dressing room mirror with the intention of tutoring her. When she asked him if he was the Angel of Music that her father promised to send her, he just agreed to that. We also have the Persian. That's another difference, because the Persian doesn't exist basically outside of the novel. Like, well, of course, in the 1925 film, but the Persian doesn't exist in the musical or the movie, because the movie is based on the musical. The Phantom's name, of course, it is mentioned to be Eric, E-R-I-K. I knew what Eric in high school was spelled like that. Another big one. The chandelier, of course. The Eric drops a chandelier, that a disaster beyond your imagination will occur. The timing of the disaster or chandelier plays at a different time in the musical. Oh, apparently in the musical brought down... the reason why it falls is different. The in the novel, as we discussed it, he basically did that to say, hey, fuck you, I'm real, killed the person, fucked with Carlotta. In the musical, it was brought down, he brought down the chandelier in a fit of rage after learning of Christine's engagement. So, and of course in the movie he uses it as a diversion to get away. Raoul's brother, you know, we talked about Philippe. He's not in the musical. Yeah. The Phantom's magic. Now, this one is also a good difference between the movie as well. As you in the novel, Eric's talents is described in great detail. He is a ventriloquist that helped make the opera house believe that it was haunted. Those who chose to be seated in box 5 heard the Phantom's voice address him. you know, directly saying it's taken. He's a genius, made clear with his musical skill, clever pranks, and clever pranks, fuck you. and architectural talents. And a big difference between the musical and the movie is there's a scene where Christine goes to the cemetery, and eventually the Phantom and Raoul fight. In the movie, it is a sword fight, which is cool and all. You know, it's really tension, cinematic as fuck. In the musical, it's fireballs. The Phantom has a staff that launches fireballs at Raoul, basically encouraging him to come closer and closer to him. But it turns out, as soon as he gets Christine stops him from getting all the way there, because, hey, it was a trap. Good one. The unmasking of Eric is different. In the book, Eric is unmasked by Christine the first time he brings her to his lair. In his lair, he and Christine singing together as he played. Overcome by curiosity to know the identity of her tutor, Christine unmasked him. This does not happen in the musical. But in the second masking, blah, blah, blah. The mask is not described in the book. And it covers the entire face. Which, yeah. And I can see, this is just from a guess, that Andrew Lloyd Webber, because if you look at the design of the original, like, ad poster for The Phantom of the Opera, it's a full face mask. But instead they move it to the half one, probably just due to so there can be some expressiveness, unlike in movies where you can have, you know, up close cameras, so you can see Gerard Butler's handsome face, you know, emoting and all that. Sometimes people are all the way back in the theaters. When I got to see Hamilton, I was up in the rafters. I was in the nosebleeds. As well as Beauty and the Beast when I saw that. You know, I was up there in the nosebleeds. So people in the back have to have as great, you know, they need to also see expressiveness because they also paid. So I can see why maybe that was changed to be like that. The ring, of course, the ring bears significant in the novel, and it's not really expressed in the musical at all. Because, you know, as opposed to Christine putting it back on his body after he's dead, Christine returns it to him as a goodbye. The scorpion, which is never talked out, which I didn't talk about all, and it's basically the scorpion and the grasshopper. A scorpion and a grasshopper is placed before Christine to make her choice. If she turns a scorpion, she must marry Eric. If she turns grasshopper, it will jump jolly high. And this is where I'm surprised that's not mentioned, because this is really fucking hilarious how this is put. Where if she turns to grasshopper, she'll explode the opera house. But if she turns a scorpion, she will confirm to marry Eric. But in the musics, the ultimatum is, hey, if you don't fucking marry me, I'm going to kill Raoul. To which she kisses him, and then Eric's like, oh my gosh, she doesn't really love me, and he breaks down and all that. And also, like, the ending is different. Because, Eric lets Christine and Raoul leave together, and it's implied that they were married. After which, Eric returns to his friend the Persian, and who has never been kissed by a woman. He says that he's never been kissed by a woman, tells basically the whole story to the Persian about what's going on. In the musical, Christine and Raoul just leave, and the Phantom breaks a mirror, goes into it, and disappears. But, besides Lon Chaney, who was the first person to perform as the Phantom of the Opera, Eric, we have also Claude Rains in the 1943 film, Herbert Lom in 1962, Wilmy Finley in the 1974, personal fucking twist of mine, Robert Englund, Freddy fucking Krueger himself, in the 1989 horror film version of the Phantom of the Opera. We have Julian Strand's in the 1998, and Gerard Butler, which of course was the 2004 adaptation of the musical, not the book. And, you know, there's so many. The most, the first and probably most, well, at least to me, the most famous person on the musical to perform it was Michael Crawford, who is the original Phantom. But there are other people. Timothy Nolan, who placed Crawford on Broadway. Robert Guillemare, which I probably pronounced that way wrong. But he was the very first African-American Phantom, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I think that's about the important people. But, you know, pop culture. Of course, we got Bob... Of course, I say... Phantom appears in Bob Dylan's 1965 song, Desolation Row. Heavy metal band Iron Maiden has a song called The Phantom of the Opera. Jared, that's for you. Hashtag JokeyPans. Universal Studios, attractions Beetlejuice's Rock and Roll Graveyard Revenue, features The Phantom of the Opera as a rock star. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the Phantom of the Opera mentions. Gremlins 2, The New Batch. One of the gremlins gets his face burned by acid, puts on a mask, which is another thing where a lot of, I can understand, but I don't know where the idea of the Phantom of the Opera burnt his face via acid came from. I can understand it, but actually, you know what, while we're here together, why do people think the Phantom burnt his face with acid? Wait. Acid. In the 1943 film, features Claude Rains as the Phantom. The Phantom's facial disfigurement is caused from having acid thrown into his face rather than being born disfigured. I'm curious about that. So that's why, because probably, a lot of people probably grew up with that as opposed to, you know, just, yeah. And this is, it's pretty cool. I mean, this guy's makeup, everyone should just look up the makeup of the Phantom of the Opera Uncovered, because the 1943 one is probably where the Andrew Lloyd Webber got his idea for the mask, as it is a double, basically it's the double side mask of the original. It is a full size of the Phantom mask that you see, and he does have like half of his face is injured from the acid as opposed to his full face. So that's probably the inspiration. I can't speak for Andrew Lloyd Webber, but I'd be willing to bet that that's the inspiration for the Phantom of the Opera. And the adaptation of the musical was in 1986? Yeah, 1986. The Phantom King was the most successful entertainment event until The Lion King surpassed it in 2014. By 2011, it has been seen by 130 million people in 145 cities across 27 countries. So besides The Lion King, which, yeah, I can understand why, go Lion King, The Phantom of the Opera is probably the most popular musical of all time, which is understandable. You know, I hope one time I'll be able to go see it in theaters. Come the Grand Rapids, Phantom of the Opera. There's got to be a 2020-something tour coming out soon after the world reopens, if it ever reopens. But, that's probably just going to be it today. I just talked for fucking 45-ish minutes straight. You can follow me at CLT_sandwich and at Inferno Frenzy on Twitter. You can email thecltsandwich@gmail.com to, you know, for any comments, suggestions, hellos, if you want to tell me your favorite fucking book, tell me your favorite cryptid, tell me whatever the hell you want. Reach out to me. Go ahead and do that. Also, if you want to support the channel, get early access when I fucking remember it. Like 45 times out of 50, I'll remember it. But you will get an ad-free version of CLT Sandwich. Just go to patreon.com/oddcastn. What's OddcastN, I hear you saying? Well, that's it's the Oddcast Network. It is the channel that runs multiple podcasts, including What an Oddcast, What an Odd Chat, Worst Nostalgia Trip Ever Taken. We are all part of the Oddcast Network. Check us all out. But thank you for listening and sampling today's flavors, CLT Sandwich. We hope that you enjoyed it and you will join us next week to try a brand new one. And remember, there are whispers in the shadows, unseen creatures out there, and the Phantom of the Opera. But do not be afraid. We are here to make them more palatable for everyone's consumption. Stay safe and stay hungry.